Before I found blogging, though, I had this incident happen with a credit card company, a big credit card company, where I kept getting these fraudulent charges on my card.
Oh.
And it was super frustrating for me because they're supposed to be like the top in the world for like, you know, managing that kind of crap. And I was spending 2 and 3 hours fighting with them to get my money back. And I was just like, this is such a waste of my life. Like, you know, going back to that, like, this is such a waste of my life. And I would get on the phone with them and they'd say, well, it looks like you sent a keyboard from this company to a spa in California. I'm like, why the crap would I do that? Like, why? Why would I do that? And they're like, I don't know, ma'am. This is just what it says. And after like the fourth call like this, I snapped, Michelle. Like something in my brain snapped.
The incident.
The incident, as it were. I was on the phone with a customer service person, and I remember saying, sir, I know that you are just a customer service worker and that this is not your fault.
Mm.
I said, but if your company is recording this call for quality assurance, I got something to say.
Oh, snap.
And I said, I'm done. I was like, I will never use a credit card again. And I was like, I'm going cash only. This is a waste of my life. You're supposed to protect me. You didn't. I'm done. Shut it down. And I hung up the phone. And when my husband got home, I'm like, I'm done. I was like, we are going cash only. I cannot live this way. I was like, I cannot live wasting time trying to get back this money. I don't want to try to fight for my money. But Michelle, the crazy thing was, I realized that day that I was not fighting for my money, that money did not belong to me.
Welcome to Michelle is Money Hungry, formerly known as Girl Gone Frugal Again. I'm your host, Michelle Jackson, and I am thrilled to have this week's guest. Technically, we may have done this interview in, October, but some crazy things happened for me personally in October through the end of fall, so I was not as diligent, I hate to admit, about releasing episodes, but I always think that things work out for the best, and I believe that to be the case with this week's episode. It coincides with a series of content that I'll be releasing throughout the month of February, all about blogging. And this week's guest and I talk about Ruth Sukup, who is one of the people pivotal in getting her started in her blogging. So I will be sharing a link to Ruth Sukup's The Secret Blueprint for Blogging Success, as well as her blogging Without Selling Your Soul book in the show notes. So we'll talk about a couple of different resources throughout the show. I will share those resources in the show notes. Please do check them out. Be aware that I am an affiliate for the Elite Blog Academy and that these resources do go to that. So just be aware of that. Other than that, I'm thrilled to share this show. Can't wait for you to give me feedback on it because it's just so, I just had an amazing time. And I do think it's a really good episode. Had an amazing time speaking with my friend Kim Anderson. And she is the author of the book, Live, Save, Spend, Repeat. I will, of course, share a link to that. Enjoy the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome. I am your host, Michelle Jackson. And today I am very excited. Every time I do an episode, I say this, and I think it's kind of hilarious, but I'm always excited to talk to wonderful people in the world, in my life, doing amazing things and changing the lives of others along the way. Today, I'm speaking with my friend, Kim Anderson. Boop, 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 boop. And she's probably like, what is happening?
No, that's quite possibly the best intro I've ever gotten on a podcast interview. Just saying.
Hey, if I'm going to intro, I'm going to like bells and whistles, like, you know, I'm going all in. So Kim, please introduce yourself. Tell the people who you are, and then we're going to get right into it.
I'm Kim Anderson, and I have a lot of different things going on.
She wears a lot of hats.
Not sure where to start.
She's like a serious overachiever, people. It's scary. But
I just like I just like lots of things. And I feel like I should have the room in my life to pursue the things that I really like. So I...
Paula.
So basically, I am 33. Still holding on to those 30s. And I have a 6-year-old son, and I have a... Sorry.
You twins.
I have twin baby girls that were born last year. So they're a little over a year old now. They're freaking adorable.
They're bald and they're so cute.
Oh, I wish they would grow some hair.
Oh my God. They're so, so cute.
Everybody thinks they're seriously like, I can't let them wear like teal or any color other than pink or purple because people automatically say, what adorable little boys. And I'm just like, oh my gosh.
They are so bald. But they're
seriously,
cute.
Can we talk about something, Michelle, like real life? Here, let me get real for a second.
Let's do this. Let's segue.
If you are in public and someone has children, just try to help yourself come up with some gender neutral identification. If you are unsure, like, oh, that baby is adorable, like, just use the word baby and everybody's happy.
Those children are so cute. Okay.
That was just hashtag life lesson number one.
Oh. I'm sorry, it's really funny though. I also think that along those lines, I've made the mistake of accidentally, and I've done it twice, I will never do it again, of asking someone when the baby was coming.
Oh no.
And I can't even believe I made the mistake twice, actually. And the second, they were both so gracious, so kind. And yeah, life lesson number two, never, ever, 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 ever ask someone when their baby is due. Let them introduce the fact that they're pregnant. And then you can be like, I'm afraid to ask if you were pregnant. Maybe you just ate a kumquat. I don't know, have gas. I don't know what's going on up in there, but I don't want to assume that there's babies up in there unless you tell me.
Yeah, that is a good life lesson.
Yeah, it was very, very awkward.
This is a total, total tangent. Sorry.
No, but you know what? These are some of my favorite episodes. So share all of the different hats that you wear and that you're able to wear because basically you run an online business.
Okay. So basically I started blogging 4.5 years ago almost. And
that's it?
Yeah. Yeah. That was 4.5 years ago that I figured it out. Like I kind of stumbled upon blogging and was really desperately trying to find what was my jam back then because I felt really lost. Like I had a new baby. And before I had my kid, I actually had quit my day job like about a year before I had a child because the commute was just terrible and I couldn't do it. And so my husband made enough money with his engineering job that, you know, we did a budget and were able to see, hey, we can live on one income. So it basically kind of freed me up to do whatever kind of entrepreneurial things I wanted to pursue. And for a while, I kind of did freelance writing or like I wrote like curriculum and stuff for churches and things like that. That was kind of how I made my side hustle money when I first quit my job, just to kind of have some, you know, like support income coming, but it wasn't anything steady and it was all kind of just whenever I could do it. So then I just distinctly remember feeling this like crushing weight that like I was going to wake up in 18 years and not know who I was anymore. And that scared me more than anything else because even though I loved being a mother and I loved having a child, there was something inside of me that still needed to express my like creativity and still do some sort of work that made my heart happy. And I knew the curriculum really wasn't doing that. Like, even though like it was fun to do curriculum here or there, like it wasn't as creative as I wanted it to be. So I can remember one night just like ugly crying in the shower. I don't know if you heard that. And I was just like, I have got to figure my life out. Like, this is nuts. And so I know that I was like super dejected, went to bed, was laying there. And you know, kind of like that weird place, like right before you fall asleep, like where you're like still awake, but still asleep, like that really weird place.
You have like weird, like meta dreams or you think God's talking to you. And you're like, God, you look like The Rock. Like, what is happening? Yeah, I know that place.
In that place, like I heard the thought, like this thought like crossed my head and it was start a blog. And I was like, that's weird. And I fell asleep. And so I woke up the next day and pretty much like devoured any information I could find on Amazon at the time, which was not a lot about blogging. And at the time there were two books on there. It was Bob Lodich's blogging book and Ruth Sukup's blogging book, How to Blog for Profit. without selling your soul. And so I just like devoured that, like dove deep into blogging. And I knew like when I hit chapter two of Ruth's book, she said in chapter two that her husband was an aerospace engineer and he was able to quit his job because of her blog income. And I thought, that's freaking ridiculous, right? Because my husband was an electrical engineer and, you know, we were basically relying on his income. And I'm like, I can't even imagine that. But somebody out there in the world had done this thing, which was really compelling to me, and had done that. And so when I started, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make enough money that my husband can quit his engineering job. Like, that was what I wanted to do. And that, you know, flash forward 3.5 years. This January, my husband quit his electrical engineering job.
Oh, yeah. So,
yeah, I was super excited. Like, couldn't wait. And there just came a place where we realized, like, the blog was making enough money that it was a no-brainer. You know what I mean? Just go for it. Why not? Just go for it. And a lot of people probably thought we were crazy because we have children and health insurance and things we got to think about and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, flash forward to now, my other hats that I'm wearing besides being a mom of twins and a six-year-old is that I have a coaching business for this really focused on newer online content creators, people who are just trying to kind of get going, like are struggling with getting momentum and all that kind of stuff. So I do coaching for newer bloggers / online content creators, or people who just need motivation to kind of keep going. Like my coaching is a little bit different, I think, in that, you know, like my friends call me the blogging shrink. Like
I agree with this based on the question that you asked me before we got started. People, she like called me out, man. And it was actually a good thing. I'm not going to tell you what she asked, but it actually ended up, and we're going to talk about this for a little long, further into the interview, but we touched on this notion of passion, but she did kind of, she like zeroed in. Now, to be fair, she's known me for several years and has observed what I've been doing. So I felt like I knew where she was coming from when asking this question, and it was a really good question to ask. So you're the blogging shrink.
Yeah. So it's more of, I think people feel emotionally and I don't know. I think they just feel encouraged. Like that's kind of the key component is there's a lot you can do to help people like set goals and do like things like that. But for me in particular, like one of my strengths and passions, if we're using the passion word, is encouraging people to just keep going, because that's probably one of the bigger issues that newer people in online content creation face is that they don't want to keep going. They have a hard time sticking with it and just seeing it through to the success point. So that's happening. When my book just came out, my first traditionally published book just came out October 1st. That's super exciting. That's 2 years of my life invested in that project. And that came about because of blogging. So that's really exciting. It's called Live, Save, Spend, Repeat, The Life You Want with the Money You Have. And it kind of backs up this whole thing where I'm always talking about, you know, you can put your money behind your life goals. So go ahead.
Actually, I want to talk a little bit about your financial story, because for the listeners, if they're new, they may not realize that Girl Gone Frugal, even though it says it's called Girl Gone Frugal again, this podcast is a kind of a love project, if you will, a passion project that came out of a personal finance blog. So I want to kind of get into your personal finance story. Like what, because you were blogging specifically in that niche. I do think that your success could have happened with the knowledge that you have. It can be duplicated in different niches, but I want to really talk about where you're at and where you're positioned. What was your story and how did it apply to Live, Save, Spend, Repeat?
Well, when I was in my 20s, how far back do you want me to go? Just in my financial story, or do you want me to back it up to grad school for my husband and kind of how those decisions influence these? I don't want to go too far back.
Let's do both time. Because we do have listeners who are looking to get married, and some of them are older than their 20s, and it might be valuable to hear about their spouse's financial decisions and sure, how those will affect them as well.
Okay. So this is how it went. My husband and I got married when we were 21, like fresh out of college.
Ooh, and babies.
Yeah. And so immediately after we graduated, my husband got, because of like his grades and things like that in undergrad, he got a scholarship. And so we moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and he went to Georgia Tech. Mm. He was supposed to be going to get his PhD in robotics. And so he basically was starting his master's program. He finished the master's program, started his first semester of the PhD robotics program. And I remember like one night I was in our like tiny one bedroom apartment. I had fallen asleep on the couch, probably reading Twilight, which is embarrassing to admit now.
Oh my God. I was totally thinking I wanted to watch the second movie. Literally, I had Rob Patterson on the brain today.
Oh my gosh. So,
God, you're my friend.
That's so funny. So I remember him walking in and like dropping his backpack and just walking back to the bedroom, like totally dejected. And I knew something was wrong. And so I went back and we started talking, and he really just opened up about all the frustrations he was feeling, the pressure he was feeling. And he said, "You know what, Kim?" He said, "I don't think I'm on the right path." And I said, "I don't really understand. Like, this is all you've ever wanted." He's like, "The outcome is we move to Boston or we move to San Francisco." And he's like, "I don't want to move to Boston and I don't want to move to San Francisco. Like, I like being in the South close to family. Like, that's what we valued." Mm. And he said, "I don't think I'm on the right path." And I was like, "Then we need to pivot." And so that was like sort of the beginning of our big story, because this was the first time in our life when we decided that it was okay to pivot, like to decide that even though everybody is expecting you to get this PhD in robotics and everybody's expecting us to like have this, you know, this great success at Georgia Tech, and this is the path that everybody takes, you know, that not everybody takes, but people take, like once you start this path of graduate school, you finish grad school, you know what I mean? And you go on to do the career that's associated with your graduate degree or whatever. And it was the first time that we paused and said, is this what we really want? And I'm glad that we did, because we got off the train and we said no. So he walked out of Georgia Tech with a master's, got a regular engineering job, and then we started the whole like normal life thing. And that kind of fast forwards to my story, where once we moved out of the city and into the burbs, my commute was 2 hours in, 2 hours out every day.
Oh my God.
And it's not because we moved that far out. It's because it's Atlanta.
Like, it's, you know what? It's really funny that you mentioned this commute. The commute was a huge reason why I quit my job. I just couldn't. I lived in Denver and I commuted to Boulder. But ironically, when I was little, that drive was like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. It is no longer 20 minutes. And right. At the time, at the height of my commuting, if you will, they started working on the highway. So not only do we have all these people like moving into Denver, they start working on the highway. We get snow. It was, so on average, it could be anywhere from leaving my house, you know, to from leaving my front door to hitting the front door for my job, an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on mm-hmm. what was happening. And then there were a couple times where I got trapped on the highway during a snowstorm.
Oh gosh.
In a bus. Very nice buses, very nice buses. But the last time, and I was like, I'm done. We were on the highway for 8 hours. It was like the Walking Dead. People yeah. were leaving their car, abandoning their cars. There was snow, like 3-4 foot drifts, like snow drifts. Finally, people, we had to pee outside the bus.
Oh gosh.
I mean, it was crazy. Well, 8 hours. We were sharing Twizzlers for dinner. Oh, and so finally our bus driver was able to get us out of it. We kind of got stuck. That was part of the issue too. We were the only vehicle driving from the middle of, from like this point in the highway, maybe like 15 miles away to Denver.
Wow.
On a major metropolitan highway. So when you talk 2 hour commute, a regular back and forth, it's not living. It's crazy. So I hear where you're going with that. It's crazy.
I mean, that was 4 hours of my day, of my life, just wasted with nothing at all to show for it. And so, you know, and like I said, like what I was going to say is like the actual drive from my house to my job was only 30 minutes. Like if it wasn't during rush hour, it was a 30 minute drive. But during rush hour, when I had to leave the house and when I had to leave my work based on my hours, that was what was going on. So probably like 2 months into this, situation, Kressel was like, you're like exhausted all the time. Like, you don't have any, like, you're just toast when you come home and you have to get up early and leave. And he's like, I don't ever see you. And, you know, like, I didn't feel like cooking ever. I didn't feel like cleaning. Like, our house was a wreck. And like, Kressel helped, but he was also in a similar situation where he was commuting to his job every day. So it got to where he was just like, why don't you quit? You know, and me being like a pretty strong, independent female was like, I have a 4-year degree. Like, why would I quit my job? Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, I'm not a mom. Like, there's no reason for me to start staying at home. Like, that's not normal. You know, and he was like, I don't know. He's like, I think your quality of life would be better if you just quit. And I'm like, and he kind of came up 2 or 3 times. And finally, like, because I didn't really believe it was possible, I remember getting really upset and being like, what if I did quit? Like, if I quit my job, what would we do? How would we survive? And he's like, why don't we see if we could survive? And so that was the first time that we ever sat down together and looked at the budget, because up until that point, I didn't really want to be involved in the money. Like, I would rather just kind of like, you know, I'm going to go buy groceries or like, you know what I mean? Like, I just, I wasn't that in when it came to the money. Like, I figured that's your skill set. You should do that. I don't really care how it all works out. As long as we're not like, you know, destitute, going into terrible debt or something, like, just let me know when it becomes a problem, you know. That's kind of where I was at. And so when I saw how the money played out, he was absolutely right. Like, we could actually, you know, survive, because we didn't have kids or anything. Like, we could make it. And then I started to dream a little bit, because I realized that I was going to have 8 hours a day to, you know, like, not only kind of take care of the house, but like explore things that I was passionate about. And I started with writing the curriculum, but then that's when I found, you know, shortly thereafter I found blogging. Around, trying to think, before I found blogging though, I had this incident happen with a credit card company, a big credit card company, where I kept getting these fraudulent charges on my card.
Oh.
And it was super frustrating for me, because they're supposed to be like the top in the world for, like, you know, managing that kind of crap. And I was spending 2 and 3 hours fighting with them to get my money back. And I was just like, this is such a waste of my life. Like, you know, going back to that, like, this is such a waste of my life. And I would get on the phone with them and they'd say, well, it looks like you sent a keyboard from this company to a spa in California. I'm like, why the crap would I do that? Like, why? Why would I do that? And they're like, I don't know, ma'am. This is just what it says. And after like the fourth call like this, I snapped, Michelle. Like, something in my brain snapped.
The incident.
The incident, as it were. I was on the phone with a customer service person, and I remember saying, sir, I know that you are just a customer service worker and that this is not your fault. I said, but if your company is recording this call for quality assurance, I got something to say.
Oh, snap.
And I said, I'm done. I was like, I will never use a credit card again. And I was like, I'm going cash only. This is a waste of my life. You're supposed to protect me. You didn't. I'm done. Shut it down. And I hung up the phone. And when my husband got home, I'm like, I'm done. I was like, we are going cash only. I cannot live this way. I was like, I cannot live wasting time trying to get back this money. I don't want to try to fight for my money. But Michelle, the crazy thing was, I realized that day that I was not fighting for my money, that money did not belong to me, that I borrowed that money and it belonged to the credit card company. And that is why I had to go through that. And I vowed that day that my money was going to be my money and nobody else's.
I just have an image of you like standing on top of a mountain, looking stoically out at the masses of people with credit cards. And you're like, raise your scissors, cut them now. Like, as a rallying cry, just, wow, you got me fired up over here. Okay.
So that happened. And as we sort of dug into this whole idea of living like a cash only life and like living without like owing anybody money, this whole thought process, what we realized was that the only money that we really owed anybody was our mortgage. And at that time, it was $93,000. Because when I was in high school, my dad made it his objective to pay off our mortgage, like our house mortgage. So by the time I got to college, which basically my graduation party was us celebrating my graduation and my dad paying off the mortgage.
Like your mom and dad's mortgage.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I paid off their personal mortgage. So my dad was able to, because I lived at home and went to a local university, my dad cash rolled my college education. Wow. And my husband had chosen to do the same thing. He lived at home, went to a local school, got his engineering degree, and we got out of school completely debt free. So here we were, flash forward, 27. And we're looking at this $93,000 that we still owed on our house that we had bought. And we were like, okay, what do we do to pay off this debt? And I remember we sat down and pulled up an amortization table, and my husband plugged in the numbers, and we tried to see like how much of the money that we don't use really every month, like, or that's extra above our living expenses, could we put towards paying off this $93,000? And once we kind of played around with the numbers and we picked a really audacious goal, really audacious out of our comfort zone, we just decided that's what we were going to do. And the amortization table said it was going to take us 4.5 years to make that happen. And I was like, okay, that's fine. That's better than being, you know, like 30 years down the road, like being 57 when we pay this off. So I was like, okay, what can I do personally to help speed this up, to crank this up a notch? And as a person who's an entrepreneur, right, I have 8 hours a day now to figure out how to help in whatever way I can to kind of get rid of this debt. And so I was doing everything. I was making sock monkeys and selling them at craft fair. Like, let's see what else I did. We took all of our tax refunds. We took any gifts anybody gave us, like any money, any time that came into our hands went straight on the principal of that house, like over and over and over. I would do cash envelope systems for groceries. And every month at the end, if there was money left over in the grocery little envelope thing, I would walk myself into the bank and put it on the principal. I didn't care if it was $5 or $20. Like, I was going after that thing. I knew the bank people thought I was nuts. They're like, oh my gosh, she's coming in here again with $15 to put on her principal. Like, oh man, this is ridiculous. But 2 years later, it was done.
Wow.
So that is part of like the story behind, you know, setting ourselves up for total life flexibility was deciding that we didn't want to owe anybody anything and that we wanted complete and total money flexibility because, Michelle, we work hard for the money that we make. We work hard for it. And we should be able to do with that money, you know, what we want to do with that money. And it not, you know what I mean? Like, because interest is no joke. Like, interest eats up what you make with nothing to show for it whatsoever.
So with your book, what will readers get? Like, what's the goal of the book and why should we be buying this?
So the story beyond the debt payoff is that one decision was pivotal in helping us be able to create the life that we really wanted, because people will say, like, what did it feel like when you walked back into your paid off home? And honestly, it didn't feel any different. It was the same house, same doorknob, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Same 80s carpet, like, but the change happened when we sat down to do our budget for the first time after we paid off the house. And suddenly all that money that we had been like putting all our energy behind, like every month, like putting it on the mortgage, like it was just sitting there in the void because we completely deleted the mortgage line from our budget. And now it was like, well, what are we going to do? I mean, you know, besides like put money in retirement and all that kind of stuff, like what do we want to do now? And that was when we really started dreaming. Like, my husband always wanted to get his pilot's license. So we cash rolled that. And then we're like, what do we want now? What do we want to do now? And I wrote the book because I feel like there are women out in the world, especially women, who we get stuck in this rut of life where we wake up, you know, we buy a latte. We go to do our work, whatever that is. If you've got kids, you take your kids to school, you pick your kids up, you take them to soccer or whatever. You get home, you make dinner, you go to bed, and you start it all over again. And every day is like this. And you wake up 5, 10, 15, 20 years later to realize, like, you didn't do anything that you really ever wanted to do. Like, you just survived. And I wrote this book because I want to draw attention to the fact that no matter where you are financially, you can decide what things you really want, like that you can stop, pull over where you're at and say to yourself, what do I really, really want out of this one life that I have to live? Like, what do I really want? And how do I put the money that I have to work with behind those things? And I want women to say to themselves, like, I want to travel. Like, if you want to travel, why not? Just put the money that you have behind it. If you have to save up for a year, you save up for a year and you put the money behind it. And you sort of just wake up and get focused on pursuing the life that you really want with whatever money that you have to work with. Because if you put that goal in front of yourself, just like my husband and I, like in each season of that life, like in each season of our life, we have found a way to put our money behind what we wanted to do or accomplish or be, because we just decided it was worth it to go after it, to tackle it, and that we wanted to do it. And we made a plan for that. And so the book helps people not only make like a plan for your finances, which is broken down in kind of like some of the feedback I've been getting about the book is that it's really broken down in a way that you can understand budgeting, like in a really clear and simple way. And beyond just like the budget part, it comes down to making 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, and 10 year life plans, and then weaving those actually into your budget so that you make them happen.
When you talk to people about this approach, are you surprised by, or actually, I think the better thing, I'd rather say this, are you surprised by the number of people who aren't living their best lives because of money?
I'm not surprised, because I talk about it like this in the book. Have you ever read the original Wizard of Oz books?
I think when I was younger. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the story, not the movie, everybody who lives in the Emerald City is wearing these green tinted glasses. And over time, like, they get used to wearing the glasses. So to them, the Emerald City is green when it's really not. And I think that for decades and decades and decades, we've all been wearing these glasses.
The credit card glasses?
Yeah. Not just the credit card debt. I mean, not just the credit card glasses, but like the debt glasses, where it's normal. Like, it's totally normal, Michelle. And I understand that. Like, and I'm very, I'm trying to think of the right word. I'm very supportive for people in this book. Like, I'm like a big hug. Because I've been there. Like, I understand. Like, I'm not this person who's like, gotta buy your credit cards, put your wallet through a shredder, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not trying to, like, force this lifestyle down anybody's throat. I just want them to wake up for 1 second, to pause, and to ask themselves if there is something better. And if they were willing to take off the debt glasses for a second, and not rely on anybody for what they, you know, for the money that they're trying to get, if you can, why not go for it? Because the truth is, like, it's really easy to have credit cards. Like, and again, I'm not like a super anti-credit card lady who's like, oh, yeah, like I said, it's not like that at all. Because I know that there will be people who read my book and they continue using their credit cards because they want their miles or their cash back or whatever. But I do make various arguments in the book that, you know, there are ways to make money on the money without the money having to go out first. And that's what you're doing with credit cards. Like, it seems a little counterintuitive when you really think about it, that in order to make money from the credit card company, like these cashback rewards that we get, which I used to love, not going to say I didn't, but they validated kind of my irrational spending, right? Like, I would say, oh, it's movie week, I'm going to the movies, when I would never go to the movies.
I hate going to movies.
It's like, it's cashback eat out week. I'm going to go eat out, when I wouldn't have probably done that if it weren't for the fact that it was like, you know, eat out month on the credit card. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there were various like triggers with my credit cards that would cause me to spend money just because I was getting cash back. But money had to go out in order for me to get that money. And I talk about in the book, like, there's plenty of bank accounts that you can put your money in where money, you earn money without your money having to go out first. So anyway, am I going too deep, Michelle?
I'm sorry. No, I like that. Actually, you got kind of meta. And I'm sitting here thinking, I'm writing notes as you speak, actually. That's sometimes why I get a little quiet. And I want to talk about something that I interviewed a friend of mine named Michelle Poe, and she is doing very well. She and her husband in a company called Life Vantage. They sell a product called Protandim, and she's making 6 figures a month, and I'm very proud of them. I'm in no way affiliated with this product, by the way, listeners. So, and I'll include a link in the show notes. But one of the things that I've noticed in speaking with people for these podcast episodes, especially people who have done things like paid off debt, created life-changing income, just changed their lives in a profound way, is they put work into it. And so I want you to talk about first the work that goes, I mean, you kind of touched on you were making sock puppets, you were doing all these things, and just anything you could do to pay off your debt. But I think that a lot of people are very intimidated by the work it takes to change their lives, right? So, and I would say that all of us have those moments. Some moments last a lifetime. Some moments last a moment in a lifetime, like a certain part of your life. Could you talk about just building that work muscle, that work mindset, so that you can change the status quo? And then I'd like to, from there, talk about your blogging again, because I think that's really important.
So, I really think, I'm sorry, I lost focus for a second. I had a good
No,
answer and then
it's okay.
rephrase the first question, sorry.
So the first question is just talking about work and how to build that work muscle when people aren't accustomed to working hard for things. I really believe that people struggle with this because if everyone could do it, they would. And I think everyone can do it, but they don't. There's a lot of talking about, well, I wish it would be this way. I wish I could do this. I wish, I wish, I wish. So how did you build up that work muscle, that mindset, and what would you advise other people to do so that they can change things?
I would say choose something that you like to do. It's a two-part question. So the first part is when it comes to, especially when I talk about momentum milestones, like setting up these goals that you have for yourself, that goes back to just getting like really, really focused on that one thing that you want and realizing, like, so for example, let's say that one of your goals for the next year was that next year you wanted to go to Hawaii. I don't know, just making something up. Well, that might be one of your goals. So you put that down and you say, okay, I'm going to fund this. I'm going to figure out how much this costs. And then you say, okay, how am I going to fund this? And you figure that out. And to be honest with you, like, I think a lot of people think like hustles have to last forever and they don't. Like, it's just a season. Like, for my husband and I, we knew that our season was going to be 4 years to pay off our mortgage, 4.5 years. So I kind of got that in my head. But 4 years is a long time to pursue that, right? So it's taking it day by day and saying, what can I do today to get myself one step closer to that thing that I really, really want just today? And I also think that hard work doesn't have to be hard if you like it. And so in the book, I even talk about how, you know, like there are ways to make a side income doing things you like. I made sock monkeys because I like to sew and I like doing craft fairs. So I did that and I made money doing it. I think that there's this idea that like the only way that you can make a hustle if you've got a full-time job or something like that is to do like food delivery or, you know what I mean? Like the normal sort of like side hustle jobs. But you may have the tools in your garage right now to do a side hustle that could really help you make forward progress toward the goal that you have. So if you've got like a pressure washer in your garage, like you could go contract yourself out to pressure wash people's driveways on the weekends. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like using the tools, talents, and gifts that you have, work doesn't have to be like hard necessarily. I mean, you want to show up and you want to do the work, but it doesn't have to be something that you loathe for that season. Do you know what I
Oh,
mean?
I love that. I absolutely love it. And I think you're the first person to kind of frame it that way. And in all the podcast episodes and writing that I've done and listened to, I think you're the first person to be like, it doesn't have to suck.
It doesn't. I mean, that's my whole thing. Like, even with the book, like I talk about, like paying off debt doesn't have to suck. Like it doesn't have to be this like, oh my God, we're going to have to lock you down for blah, blah, blah. You can enjoy the journey. That's why live is the first part of the book title. Because everybody's got to live. And if you only get one shot at it, it should be the best life you can make for yourself.
So when you were paying off debt, what did life look like for you? Was it fun? Like what'd you guys do?
Yeah, I mean, it was fun for me because it was like a game. Like I was excited to see how much I could have left over in my grocery budget every month so I could put it on the principal. Like I liked watching the people's faces in the bank when I walked up and put $15 on my principal because I knew they had no idea what this crazy woman was doing. But in my head, I knew, just like I knew my husband was going to quit his job one day, that if I just kept doing it each and every day, that there would come a point when it would be done and I would be free.
What would you say to the person who's like, well, I get so tired?
Then you need to take a break.
Fair enough.
Because I even talk about that in the book. I talk about everybody's got must-have happy habits. You have things that you need to do to keep you going. Because just like work, a job, like if you don't have vacation time at your job, you're going to get weighed down and like, you're going to resent your job, resent your employer. And I don't want you to resent your journey either. Like if you're getting frustrated by your journey, take a break, go do something fun, go out to eat, do something to help you. But just know that the longer, like the more fun, like not the more fun, but the more vacations that you take from pursuing the milestone that you've set for yourself, the slower the process will be. And if you're okay with it taking less time, that's perfectly fine. And that's your choice to make.
I want to touch on something that you shared earlier in the episode that probably a lot of listeners are like, well, what? Like, share more. So one of the things that you did was you grew your blog to the point where it's making enough money that you were able to bring your husband home from an engineering job. You're supporting your family. It's doing very well. Blogging income is kind of wonderful because once you really understand what you're doing, it has babies like rabbits. Yep. Yep. And so I want to talk about when did you really get focused on making income with your blog and maybe one or two of the things that you facilitated to make that happen. Especially kind of for maybe someone who's blogged a little bit, they haven't really focused on monetization, or even a new blogger.
I knew I wanted to make money from day one. Oh. So, because when I started blogging, I knew that it was possible to potentially let your engineering husband quit his job. So from day one, I started trying to figure out ways that I could make money. To be honest with you, I was like in that like throw spaghetti on the wall or on the refrigerator phase. I wrote ebooks and put them on Amazon, like that were associated with my brand. I started doing ads, putting out as much content as I could using Pinterest. Like I pretty much just hustled after every ounce of traffic that I could get. And then once I got my traffic up, I knew the next best, you know, the next best thing I could do was try to get like sponsored posts from brands. Like it was a whole thing. But from day one, I mean, I celebrated the first 4 cents that came in on AdSense because I knew that that was proof that I could make money. I knew that that was proof that I could make money doing what I loved.
So how did you amplify the effect? Like, how did you go from 0.04 to more?
I woke up every day and I blogged.
And what did, like, walk us through a day. And I'm kind of, you know, every once in a while I'll do an episode like this and then I'm like, let's like really get into it because it goes back to the work. So I think that a lot of people have this idea that blogging is hard. But I don't think it's necessarily hard. I just think that there's focus and hard work. So
yeah,
walk through what your day looked like. You're a mom with an itty bitty. You've got things yep. going on. What did a day in a life look like in the beginning? Especially because you had this
The very beginning was I was feeding babies, taking care of babies, changing dirty diapers, cleaning the house, and then writing curriculum when my son was down for a nap. Like I didn't even work on the blog, but initially during the day. And then at night when my son went to bed, I would work on the blog. So I would work on the blog every night from like 8 to 10, 8 to 12, however late I wanted to stay up. And I just did it. And it was just like, and that's what I tell people all the time. Like, I have a podcast called Just Keep Blogging. And I started it.
So because, good.
Because my objective is to help people decide that blogging is worth it to pursue and pursue it every single day. Because if you will pursue blogging and do the next best step for you and your business, even if you're experimenting, even if you're trying new things, like if you will just continue to do it, continue to put out consistent content, continue to grow your email list, all these things, there will come a day when you've got enough momentum that it makes money.
And I have a question. Were you putting out content daily, or were you repurposing, or just a little bit of everything?
I was putting out maybe in the beginning, like 3 posts a week. And then now, like probably this year, I started down to where I was just 1 post a week, just because I've got enough back content to drive traffic to the site.
And then, I think the last question would be, how much time do you spend marketing what you do? So you're doing this podcast now. If you didn't have the book coming out, what would marketing look like for your projects?
Well, I mean, I think in general, when it comes to marketing, like you're just trying to, like my main objective always is to add value, right? Like to add value to the online world. So when I wake up in the mornings, I ask myself, like, really, how can I add value? And I mean, obviously, I'm using things like Pinterest. At this point, I don't really pay for ads unless it's the holiday season. You know, and as far as marketing goes, it's really, to me, it all comes down to being authentic and just being in the right places at the right time and helping people in an authentic way. And I think that's one of the core values.
If people wanted to get coaching from you, how would they get in touch with you regarding that?
So I have a website called KimAndersonConsulting.com, and it shows you like all the stuff that I have going on. I have group coaching kind of settings. I have live workshops. And then I have one-on-one coaching packages. One of them is like a 12-week based. And then I have kind of like, you know, one-off, like if you just need an hour of blogging therapy.
And then finally, I will be including links to the book. So please, please, everyone, please purchase this book. She walks the walk. She doesn't just talk about stuff. She is very mission driven to help you have the best life that you possibly can have. Share any other area, social media, that kind of thing that you'd like people to follow you at and find you.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys end up buying the book, go to livesavespendrepeat.com. And there's a free companion workbook that has all the like questions and kind of like budget sheets and stuff. So you can kind of see those hands on. My regular blog that I started 4.5 years ago is thriftylittlemom.com. So I would love it for you guys if you want to join the email list on any of those websites. That would be awesome. KimAndersonConsulting.com is all blogging based. So there's 50 ways to monetize your blog today. Freebie there if you want to join the email list and kind of stay in touch with all things encouragement and blogging.
So listeners, I will leave you with this question. What season in your life are you in? And if you're looking to change that season, what are you willing to do? Kim has left you with a ton of actionable advice, a resource, tools, another podcast to listen to. There's so many things that you can do. I just would love to know what is the number one thing you're going to leave with today and number one action you're going to take. So please do reach out to her, let her know that you heard about her and heard her interview. I'm so excited to continue watching her story and her serve others with her information. And I don't know what else I want to say. I'll leave that in there. Whatever. Don't judge me.
Thank you, Michelle. I really appreciate this opportunity. You're awesome. I'm so glad that you were in my first ever mastermind group.
Yay. I loved it. It was so awesome.